Now the towers have fallen, so much dust in the air. It affected your vision, couldn't see yourself clear. From the fall came such choices, even worse than the fall. There's this chain of consequences within, without. Action, cause and reaction never falls to plan. Black swans and your picnic table knocking over the jam. Please don't preach me forgiveness, you're hardwired for revenge. War is just about business with me, without. Dead live on within us. Keep your fingers crossed. We were choking on the smoke and the dust and the lives that were lost. Scratch the surface of liberals, there's a beast underneath. Others hide in their jackals within, without.
Welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear this program at axissacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com and hear this program and past programs, or you can go to Facebook and friend this program. Today's program includes Scott Horton interviews Gareth Porter. Gareth Porter is an independent historian and journalist for the IPS News, and he discusses Eisenhower's extraordinary farewell address and the overblown Soviet threat and missile gap hoax scare. They talk about revelations that the British mission in Afghanistan was simply to give the army something to do, and the three choices for fighting back against state militarism: abolish government, protest for change, or expatriate. And then after that, Scott Horton interviews Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern discusses the Department of Justice's decision to use military tribunals instead of federal court trials for the alleged 9/11 plotters. He also discusses where the U.S. empire bases intersects with the domination of oil and gas resources. Ray McGovern was a CIA analyst for 27 years.
Well, you know, there was just this story out of the UK. There was an article on Spiked Online about it, the former British ambassador to Afghanistan had made all these very candid statements to the parliament, I guess in secret, but then all the documents came out. And basically what he said was that the only reason that the United Kingdom is involved in the Afghan war at all, it's not even to placate the Americans. It's so that the military has something to do.
Right.
And that they were saying, okay, we're getting out of Iraq, but now what are we going to do? We don't want to have to abolish any divisions. And he actually talked about a particular counterinsurgency strategy in Helmand Province that was simply about, well, what the hell are we going to do with all these soldiers? Let's send them to Helmand Province, and that it was at the very best not designed to be counterproductive or productive at all, and certainly was counterproductive.
And that's exactly the problem with NATO. I mean, they didn't have anything to do, and so, you know, the NATO guys in the U.S. government and in the U.S. military, of course, arranged to have Afghanistan turned over to NATO because we had to give these people something to do so that they would have a reason to continue to exist. Otherwise, it would go out of business, and there would be fewer places to send U.S. generals and fewer ways to get your stars and your stripes as high-ranking U.S. officers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it seems to me the only solution really here is to abolish the executive and legislative and judicial branches of government. I mean, no IRS, no judges to put you in jail, no Congress to pass all these taxes or to create a central bank that can inflate the money supply in order to pay for all this madness, and then finally these guys will be bankrupt.
Well, I mean, you have two choices here. If you understand that that this system is an automatic ticket to basically, the continued running down of the economy, the continued wrecking of the society, and all of the social and other ills that would attend that process, that do attend that process. There are three choices. You can do what you're suggesting, which is to try to abolish the executive branch. I don't think that's going to have much traction in this society or any other society. Second choice.
No, Americans love their presidents. Just love them to pieces.
The second choice is to actually organize a powerful movement that can, in fact, force the issue of ending a permanent war state by saying, you know, you're not going to support this. We won't elect anybody to office. To basically use that power, which has not been used thus far for that purpose. The third one is to actually escape the system and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Everybody always says go to Costa Rica, but that place is ruled by the U.S. Marine Corps, right?
No, it's not ruled by U.S. Marine Corps. It's probably more ruled by Chinese businessmen than U.S. Marine Corps.
Yeah. Well, at least they're interested in making money. That was one of the WikiLeaks, right, was the Americans and the Russians competing who can bribe the Kyrgyz into letting us keep our Manas air base there,
yeah,
or not or whatever.
Right,
and
right.
The diplomats' assumption that the Chinese must be trying to bribe their way into putting a base there too and competing with this assumed Chinese bribe that never existed. And the Chinese explain that, nah, man, we're about briefcases full of cash and shaking hands, you know, the American way.
Right, right.
And the American diplomats were absolutely, like, just, you know, discombobulated. They didn't understand that, what do you mean you're not trying to build an air base here? And they were like saying, no, we don't. We don't want to expand militarily across the world. We'll leave that to you guys.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is that there's two...
Smart businessmen, those Chinese.
There's two choices, flight or fight. Fight,
yeah,
or flight, I guess is the way you say it.
All right, well, so how do we fight then? Short of just convincing everyone to be an anarcho-capitalist, which I guess I can't do.
I don't think you can do that.
Okay, so falling short of the actual solution, what do we do?
Well, I think we have to begin with the organizations that we already have, not try to discourage people from continuing to work in the organizations that already exist, but have an effective overall sort of umbrella arrangement, coalition of organizations that understand the seriousness of the threat of the permanent war state, and have a common strategy and a common analysis, which requires that we all convene at some point in a big conference and really talk this through and come to a meeting of the minds. Right now, people who are activists are sort of split along many different kinds of lines and have no common analysis or strategy. And that, of course, is the beginning of an effective movement to unite around a strategy and an analysis. And I think we have to have something that people can do. We have to have something to point to that people can do that's the objective. And I think that has to be a very clear alternative policy and alternative budget for the military that lays it all out very clearly and very succinctly and concretely and says, okay, here's what millions of Americans are going to have to say. We're going to support this. If there's somebody who wants to run for office, they're going to have to say that they will vote for this before they will get any support from the people who are going to be touched by this movement. And that's the only way it's going to work.
Right. Well, you know what? This has, of course, always been the goal of antiwar.com. You know, we're pretty much plumb line libertarians, and yet we're as ecumenical as we can possibly be. And a lot of times we'll have, you know, Dan Ellsberg and Pat Buchanan have articles right there next to yours, right there on the front page. And we're very interested in at least changing people's minds about their kind of partisanship and the exclusive nature of their ideas and how they can't get along with other Americans in the way that it's portrayed on TV, all this right, left, and what have you. Because it seems to me like, you know, the left and the right agree on a lot of horrible things. They also, the best parts of the left and the right, agree with us libertarians. I'm talking about me, not you. I know you're not a libertarian. I didn't mean to imply that. But, point is, agree with us on the most important issues. They're antiwar.com type people. And what counts is, most importantly, stop the mass murder all the time, save the Bill of Rights, and stop paying welfare to General Dynamics and Northrop Grumman and Lockheed and Goldman Sachs and the rest of them. Now, we can build a bipartisan consensus around that. Stop doing these wrong things. And, you know, I guess it ain't Nader, but it ought to be a good, like, very Naderite that is principled, progressive, ought to run with Ron Paul, and we need to... That needs to be the goal, is to bum rush one party, force all the warmongers and taxmongers out of the Republican Party, make them all be good Democrats like they are anyway, and have the Republican Party be in the Ron Paulian mold, an abolitionist party, repealing the 21st century as fast as possible, the only mandate for peace, freedom, and no more welfare for people who are already rich. And, you know, there are so many good journalists and writers and activists who already have their priorities straight here. We have this Come Home America project started by Kevin Zeese that has the participation of so many good writers and activists already. And I'm really hoping that this can be the core of the new anti-war alliance. Maybe 2011 is the year for it, for people to finally get sick and tired of this empire.
Yeah, we have to start coalescing around the most basic common themes you know, that matter in this country, and without stopping and reversing the permanent war state, nothing else good can happen in this country. That's the simple fact. So I think you're absolutely on the right track.
Yep. It's such an ironic and annoying thing to me that this central issue, America's relationship with the rest of the world, the most important thing, the germ of every bad thing going on in our government, and mostly in our society, as James Madison would have put it, is the least important issue to the American people. We live in the new world way over here on the other side of these oceans, and we might as well have our own little planet here. And a lot of people, man, they just can live their lives and not even know what goes on outside their hometown and not even care. And in fact, I'm all for that, people being free to live however they want, but the problem is, none of these things matter. People say they're opposed to the wars, but not really. They're more opposed to missing their favorite show than they're opposed to the war.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we shouldn't sell short the fundamental desire of the American people to be free of the weight of the permanent war state. And I cite in my article recent polling data that shows that when people are given an opportunity to say what should be cut in the federal budget, they cut the military budget by about a third. I mean, that's far beyond what any politician has ever been willing to talk about so far. So, look, the people are way ahead of the political elite in this country on this issue. That's the fundamental reality.
Well, as you say, there are all these different groups. How do we get them organized to not just sign on to one letter, but to sign on to one big thing? I mean, I know if I was a billionaire, Gareth, I would throw a giant shindig, and there'd be a giant portrait of Mark Twain in the background, and it would be around this Come Home America thing, and I would try my best. I would pay whatever it costs to get Cindy Sheehan and Pat Buchanan up there on the stage together and to have Ron Paul give the keynote speech and have it be no more of this left and right liberal conservative partisanship. Our issues are...
Right.
Our peace,
right.
The Bill of Rights, and an end to all corporate welfare, period. Right?
But we have to have that exactly that kind of alignment. We need the, you know, $500,000 million to organize around the country, and if we had that with a loyal core of people who have the understanding, we could change this. I believe that. And I think, you know, frankly, a huge problem that we face right now is that whether it's on the left or on the right, there's a very strong sense that nothing can be done, that this power that we've seen in action in the last decade particularly is so strong that there's nothing that ordinary citizens can do. And I've seen this registered over and over again in comments to things that I've written. It's a very serious problem, and I think we have to go directly. We have to attack that sense of powerlessness as a first step. We have to give people a sense that there are things that haven't been tried, that haven't been done, that could work.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for the part I play in reinforcing that sense of powerlessness. It's just, I got it. I mean, the best thing I can think of is to, you know, call journalists on the phone where other people can overhear it. But other than that, I got no idea how to change this, man.
It's a huge challenge under the circumstances to have a notion of what could be done that would change things, but we have to try it. And you know, I sound much more optimistic than I really am in the core of my being. I mean, I have a great deal of pessimism about the way things are going, but if you want to get something done, you have to act as though it can be done. That's the fundamental principle at work here.
Yeah. Well, my operating premise for right now is that most people don't care about politics much unless it's an election year, and I don't think that this would ever work or anything, but I would like for this to be the awesome, spectacular failure, for it to be something like a Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich thing, and just have them insist that Obama and Palin run together since they agree on everything terrible. Let's stop pretending that these people have any differences between them whatsoever. They all agree completely with a weekly standard way of running the national government, and that is not what we want. And it'll be peace and freedom on one hand and the war party of death and slavery and taxation and murder on the other.
I think that would be an excellent outcome if we could have a party that had Obama and Palin and one part of one ticket, and then we had the anti-permanent war state party on the other side as its opponent. I think that would be an excellent way to...
Wouldn't that be funny? But of course, that's why it's a two-party system and they have this left-right divide so that we just can't do that.
Right.
Because people, you know, the Palinites and the good progressives think that, and there are a lot of, you know, Palinites who could be Ron Paulians if only they were persuaded a couple of times probably. But, there's so many good progressives who could never see themselves as allies with those people and vice versa. And so, this is the dilemma, but, I really appreciate, not just your journalism as always, Gareth, but, you know, your insight into, you know, how these things work and hopefully what we can do about it. So thanks very much. You're a good friend of this show and to me.
Thank you for your interest and your support.
To peace.
God, I appreciate it.
All right, y'all. That's Gareth Porter, Interpress Service and antiwar.com/Porter.
Houston, we have a problem.
I'm Scott Horton. I'm here every Friday from 6:30 to 7 o'clock for Anti-War Radio. And Ray McGovern was on yesterday to talk about what we might not hear due to
the fact that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Ramzi Ben al-Shib, and the others accused in the 9/11 terrorist attacks will not be getting a trial in New York, Illinois, or anywhere else, but will be getting a military commission down at Guantanamo Bay. And it was such a good interview, I thought we'd reprise it for you here tonight on Anti-War Radio on KPFK. Welcome to the show, Ray. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us this evening. I know it's especially late over there on the East Coast.
Well, that's okay. I'm still awake.
All right. Well, most of you in the KPFK audience are probably familiar with Ray McGovern. He's a former analyst with the CIA there for 27 years, including did the morning briefings for Vice President Bush in the 1980s. He's a co-founder of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and is a member of Veterans for Peace. He writes at Robert Perry's great website, ConsortiumNews.com, and we're running his latest article from ConsortiumNews.com right now at antiwar.com. It's called Military Tribunals May Keep 9/11 Motives Hidden. And Ray, your article pretty much begins with the story of Helen Thomas and a question unanswered. Why don't you pick it up there?
Well, Scott, it's kind of a sad story about the stenographers who passed for the White House press corps, but they never asked really, really good questions, except for Helen Thomas, who, of course, is no longer there. After the underpants bomber over Detroit, the Abdel-Muttalib, after he was apprehended and the president gave a kind of interesting press conference there in early January of 2010, he turned the proceedings over to his guru on counterterrorism, John Brennan, and he said, John will answer any of your questions. And he got some, you know, the usual anodyne questions about security measures at airports and so forth. And then Helen Thomas said, well, yeah, you know, what you never tell us, John, is why do they want to do us harm? What's their motivation? We never hear about that. It was very, very painful. I know Brennan, you know, and he just, you know, he didn't expect to be asked a real question, so he said, well, Al-Qaeda is an organization that's dedicated to murder and wanton slaughter of innocents. They pervert religion. And Helen Thomas says, oh, so it's about religion. Well, no, they're perverting religion in a corrupt way. And Helen says, well, but why? Brennan, Al-Qaeda is just determined to carry out attacks here against the homeland. Helen Thomas, but you still haven't explained why. Well, you know, there are explanations as to why, but we never hear them in what I call the fawning corporate media.
Well, and John Brennan must know what they are. He's the head of counterterrorism, right? It's not like he's the head of the House Intelligence Committee. Like, you know, I would expect somebody like Sylvester Reyes. I guess he's the minority leader now. But I know he doesn't know Hezbollah from Al-Qaeda, but this guy works in the White House.
Yeah, he knows. But it's politically incorrect to say these reasons. So what we have to do is to go back to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed himself, the so-called mastermind of 9/11. And see what he said about why he did it. Now, when he was asked during the preparation of the 9/11 Commission report why he did it, he told them, I'll quote it, the page 147, you can look it up in your 9/11 Commission report, quote, by his own account, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's animus toward the United States stemmed not from his experience there as a student, but rather from his violent disagreement with U.S. foreign policy favoring Israel. Wow. Now that's politically incorrect to say that. But that's what he said.
In Napoli, where love is king, when boy meets girl, here's what they say.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a guitar and a. When the stars make you drool, just like a pastiche, that's amore. When you dance down the street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore. That's amore.
When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
That's amore.
Bells will ring,
ting-a-ling-a-ling,
ting-a-ling-a-ling,
and you'll sing Vita Bella.
Vita Bella, Vita Bella. Hearts will play,
tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a gay tarantella.
Lucky fella.
When the stars make you drool just like pasta frazzle,
that's amore.
That's amore.
When you dance down the street with the cloud at your feet, you're in love. When you walk in a dream, but you know you're not dreaming, signore. Excuse me, but you see, back in old Napoli, that's amore.
Amore,
that's amore.
And now for something completely different.